You're listening to episode 19 of the podcast. Welcome back, everybody. I hope you're having a fantastic week. I, for one, am having a great week this week. I actually have received or been receiving lots of great feedback on the podcast. I'm super happy. Couldn't have asked for a better community to support this podcast. And we are growing, guys. We are getting new listeners every day. And we are helping more and more people every day. And more people are just interested in just listening to what we've got to say and the way that I am as a person, which also baffles me completely. However, that aside, guys, today's guest is absolutely insane. You're going to love him. If you've ever been on the website twitch.tv, which is a live streaming platform, you will know that there are global emotes that anybody in the chat can use to show their sort of emotions and to represent what they're feeling, and, you know, to portray jokes and things. And one of the most used emotes is our guest today, no other than Bless RNG, and you're going to find out how he became partnered and how he became a great individual working for sort of one of the biggest streaming companies. All that and more, guys.
You are listening to the Content Experience Podcast, the podcast for those wanting to learn more about all aspects of content creation and streaming. Each week we sit down with some of your favourite streamers to get to know the story behind the stream and what advice they would give to help build your dream career in content creation. All this with your host, taco lover, sci-fi geek and award-winning tap dancer, the Mike James.
So, welcome back, everybody. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
G'day, I am Brad or Bless RNG, mainly known as that Twitch emote of the same moniker. G'day, g'day.
Yeah, welcome to the podcast, dude. So, as you just said, I think you must get this a lot as well from, you know, everybody. But one of the biggest things, as well as, you know, everything else that you've done, such as stream elements that we're going to speak about in just a bit. But before we get into that, before I lose my thought, a lot of people know you from the global Twitch emote, the Bless RNG. Now, I'm pretty sure there's a story behind this, and I'd love to know, how did that emote come about?
Okay, it's a bit of a long story, so I'll try and truncate it somewhat. To cut a long story short, I won a series of tournaments that sent me a little bit around the world, and the grand final tournament was at TwitchCon, and the tournament's called PJ Sultan. If you've been to TwitchCon before, including the European one, they've done PJ Sultan for quite some time, and some of the PAXs as well, and the grand prize is a global emote slot to do with whatever you want, provided obviously it's within, you know, Twitch terms of service. So I won the competition, I got a slot, and Bless RNG was the kind of emote that I came up with, and me and my lead moderator Hexen designed over the course of like 6 months.
I mean, it must have been like, I can't imagine that situation, because normally when, you know, when affiliates now and partners try and make an emote, they try and make an emote that's like going to be, you know, useful to their community. But I can't imagine what it must have been like to sort of think, what can I do for the world?
Like, well, that was it. Like, I thought about it quite a lot going into this contest, because I knew about 4 months ahead that I was going to be in this tournament. So I thought about it rather extensively to be like, what is missing? What would I use, and what do I like? I'm a huge fan of watching speedrunning streams. In fact, I've got a speedrunning stream on one of my other monitors going at the moment because I'm always watching them. And I was like, yep, what's a good emote for that community? Oh, bless the run, bless RNG. Hope the run goes good. And that's kind of where the design came from. It did go a lot better than I expected. I made it. I think it'd be a cute little thing for the speedrunning community, and then the League community picked it up, then the Hearthstone community picked it up, and it kind of blew up a lot more than I expected it to, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, it is like the perfect emote for most games. I mean, things like a game that I've been playing off stream recently, like old school RuneScape and things like that, is you know, a lot of that is, you know, number generated, like drops and things like that. So it's kind of like, even I find myself using Bless RNG even completely out of context in terms of like, you know, like, oh, I just, this is like, you know, you're playing the game and then you're like, oh, I really, really could use a Bless RNG emote right now. So I think your emote is definitely the top, I'd want to say the top three emotes, especially within my own, you know, like usage, and probably a lot of other people as well. But obviously you're not just known for the emote. So why don't we digress a little bit to like the beginning of your content creation. Did you do any sort of content creation before you streamed, or was streaming like your first experience with content creation?
Oh, I did. Yes. I was actually a television presenter in Australia for 4 years. Before I started my Twitch journey, I worked in an anime and video game television show called Level 3 back then. It's called New Game Plus now. Did that for quite some time. So I came from the games journalism space.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I mean, what was that like making that switch over to... Obviously, we'll talk a little bit more about your specific journey in a moment, but what was it like transitioning from TV into streaming? Like, was there actually anything in between, or was it just like, oh, I start streaming on Twitch? And I imagine there was a lot of transferable skills in that as well.
A large amount, yes. At the TV show, we'd also started streaming on Twitch anyway, so it was a pretty natural progression for me to kind of jump across. I simply wanted to do something a bit more independent, have control over what I was doing. I'd lost a bit of passion for working in TV, and kind of Twitch was what I wanted to do. And then, you know, just made the switch over from, you know, stopped doing the TV show and then started doing Twitch instead. It was a pretty easy switch to make, to be honest, especially as I had most of the setup for capturing footage already at home, which is the case of installing OBS instead of using a video capture client or like using Elgato Game Capture HD at the time.
I mean, it's... I was going to say, like, I feel you on that because, you know, I have a degree in TV and film production, and by the end of that degree, all of my friends went off and started getting jobs in, like, short films and TV and things, and just by the end of that degree, I was, like, completely burnt out, so I understand how you feel on getting burnt out in TV, except I think you actually got a little bit further than I did, so... we'll leave that there. But I mean, when you first transferred over to Twitch, you weren't actually, obviously, you weren't known as the Bless RNG guy, and you went by the name of, was it Dioshi?
Yeah, that's it. That's the moniker I've had for like 15 years. Dioshi TV was my moniker on Twitch for a while. I only switched to Bless RNG a year after the emote came out. Thought about it for a while, but I've been Dioshi TV, like I'm 31 now, and I made that name when I was 14, so I'd used it for a long time.
Yeah, and you were a variety streamer, right? Doing things like Monster Hunter and things like that. So what was your experience jumping in? Obviously, you'd done Twitch before on your TV. So what was your experience coming into the Twitch space on your own terms, you know, having your own control of it? Because obviously, you know, the Twitch affiliate thing wasn't a thing right up until about 2 years ago, I think it was. So what was Twitch like coming into it, you know, being able to control everything on your own?
It was interesting because I've been partnered now for about 4 years, and it's been, you know, I've been streaming for about 5.5. So back when I started, a lot of those things, as I said, simply were not available. There was a lot less to do. Getting partnership was significantly harder in certain ways back then. It's also harder in certain ways now for various other reasons if we choose to go into that. But it was a lot of fun to do. I did it for fun and to make new friends. I did it as a social tool, just to meet some new people and just, you know, have fun. Play some games I was going to play anyway, and to keep getting free games from my old TV days. Wasn't working in TV anymore. Still want to get free games. I guess I'll stream them. And luckily, companies were still very supportive of me, even though I was small, because I was one of the earlier Australian Twitch content creators. There are some that outdate me, but not a very large amount. In terms of like Australian Twitch content creators that like succeeded, definitely probably be in the first 30 or so. So I'm much earlier in that space. But it meant, you know, I had fun doing it. It was a really good thing to do. Monster Hunter was the game I was known for a while. I've always been a variety streamer. But Monster Hunter was a huge focus on my channel. Most streams would still be it. And there was a good while, like probably almost a year, where it's all I played by the occasional Switch. And I'm kind of getting back into Monster Hunter now these days and enjoying it again after taking a huge break from it.
I'm going to assume that would be Monster Hunter World that you're getting back into at the moment. Are you looking forward to the expansion that's coming out in January?
It is, yes. So World's what I'm playing right now. I'm playing it on PC at the moment, but I'll need to get my PS4 account up to date as well, because Iceborne comes out on PS4 first. I'm quite excited for that. I saw it at San Diego Comic-Con when I was there. I had a lot of fun with it, and I'm very much excited to fight a bunch of new monsters and a bunch of returning monsters as well. Monster Hunter has done a lot for me and for my life in general. I'm very, very appreciative of what it's given me and the opportunities it's given me. So I'm very excited for Iceborne.
So what weapon do you main? I think that's an important question to establish.
I main the least common weapon out of all of them. I main the Hunting Horn.
It's nice to meet a fellow Hunting Horn main, actually.
There's a few of us out there. There's not many. Although in my stream, there's a lot. My stream is predominantly, funnily enough, predominantly Hunting Horn users, because, you know, it's the only weapon I use. So
I should probably get myself in there a bit more often. I mean, I am a Hunting Horn main, but I'm just dreadful using the Hunting Horn. And I think part of the issue is, obviously, Monster Hunter World. I did play a Monster Hunter Portable, like very, very briefly, but Monster Hunter World was like my first experience with Monster Hunter games. And I decided to go with a Hunting Horn because I love the concept of, you know, buffing teammates and healing teammates, but I just can't grasp how slow the weapon is, because I'm sure that probably sounds daft to somebody a little bit more experienced. But, like, you know, when you've got things like the Sword and Shield, which is pretty quick, and then the Hunting Horn is a lot slower, and especially with monsters, you've got to time your attacks and stuff. Took me about 2 days.
Takes a lot of practice, I think, for that to kind of work out, I think, with Hunting Horn. But any weapon in Monster Hunter does. It's the case of, you know, practice makes progress, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've only got 100 hours in Monster Hunter World, and I think it's because I play with a couple of people that are a lot more experienced than me. I kind of feel like, oh, after 100 hours, I should probably be a lot, you know, I should be pro, right? But it doesn't quite work like that, and I need to put a lot more hours into it, apparently. but yeah, anyway, so obviously you did Monster Hunter and such, and I imagine, was that like your sort of primary game along with others that sort of got you to partnership? Obviously you've been partnered for 4.5 years now, so was that
that's
like...
correct? Yes. Yeah. Monster Hunter is the game I got partnered on. I did a lot around that game, especially when the 3DS was kind of the way to do it. So Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate and Monster Hunter Cross, I was one of the very few people back then that had a 3DS capture card. They were, you know, they were very expensive to buy and very few people had them. So when 4U came out, there was really only, you know, 5 of us streaming the game. There was very few people who were able to stream the game because of the cost factor. And Monster Hunter really wasn't big enough yet, so all the Pokemon streamers didn't come over to it. Not to mention, I don't think Pokemon was even on the platform at the time. I can't 100% remember. I might be wrong there. But that helped out a lot. I got partnered on Monster Hunter Cross, the Japanese launch, because I also had a Japanese capture card. So when the Japanese launch for Monster Hunter come out, I'd be one of like 3 people that would have it and stream it. So there weren't very many of us at the start. A lot more obviously came around. And now these days, because it's on the Switch and PS4 and PC, everyone can play, which is fantastic. But at the time, it was a market of people who were very hungry for the content, but starved for content creators because of the lack of cheap technology to do it. So it made life very easy for me. Since then, I've barely used those capture cards. They're kind of like just sitting around in my house now, kind of gathering dust. I do keep on them. If I occasionally go back to like a 3DS game, I've got them there. And occasionally one like Persona Q2 does come out. But I've very much more or less retired from my 3DS days. I don't think I've used them in, I'd say it's been about 2 years since I've used either of them. It's been a long time since they've had any use at all.
Damn. that's quite a long time. But I mean, obviously times have moved on, and obviously you've got an established brand now, and your sort of PCs are a lot more, like you said, PCs are a lot more powerful, technology's a lot more cheaper. So but yeah, I mean, tell us a little bit about becoming partnered, you know, becoming partnered for you, because obviously Twitch was a very different platform back then. I mean, I wasn't streaming 4 years ago, but I was moderating for some full-time streamers. You may have heard of Aurelian. She was very big in the Minecraft community. And she also works for Twitch now, and I was a moderator for her, and she used to stream like every day. But I mean, tell us a little bit about your experience of getting partnership. Like, what did it feel like for you personally achieving that status back 4 years ago?
It was kind of back then, there's about 35,000 partners, give or take now. And back when I got partnered, there was about 12 to 14,000. There was a lot less of us, but still, you know, still a few. But in Australia, there was a very, very tiny amount of us. There was not many at all. I think less than 100, I think. So it was and if even at the Southeast Asia area, there still wasn't very, like, a whole lot more. Japan area, not a whole lot more. So the entire kind of Pacific area didn't have a huge amount of them. So it felt very good to get it. It was kind of like a goal of mine I wanted to prove to myself that I could do what I did on TV kind of on my own back and be like, no, I have the ability to do this by myself as long as I work hard, don't give up on it, and use the contacts I have and the PR opportunities I have to generate a lot of exclusive content that people could not generate, make the most of it and really try and do something with it. It felt really good to get partnership back then. Back then, everyone had a partner manager, so it was easy to get one of those. They looked after you very differently because there were just much less partners in the space. So that was interesting. However, there was no ANZ support. That was a big thing. There was no Australian staff in Twitch at the time. So as a result, getting opportunities was next to impossible because there was no one here to do that for us. I was able to do a lot of it on myself, and I ended up helping other streamers kind of as like a unofficial Twitch contact because I had these contacts. So if somebody's like, I want to talk to Bethesda, I'd be like, yeah, sure, I know somebody there. I can put you in touch. These days, there is now 2 staff in Australia. We all have Australian partner managers. They're very good to us. And the whole region's looked after a lot more now and has been over the last 2 years or so compared to, I think 3 years even, compared to when I got partnered where there was very little support. But they did acknowledge the space. So like, I think I got partnered 20, trying to get timeless in my head. PAX Australia 2015, there was a Twitch booth there, yeah. So they'd started to recognize the space, but there was no employees in the space.
I mean, you mentioned there about, you know, having to find all the opportunities off your own back and things. That must have been, you know, I know it must have been a little bit, obviously a lot more work, but that must have been good for you, you know, personally, you know, being able to interact with brands, because I think that's one of the big issues, especially for me as well, but one of the big issues for, you know, rising creators and people that do podcasts and things is people don't really know how to interact with brands. So sort of like, you imagine like job experience, for example, you kind of developed your own experience in working with brands because you had to, because there was nobody else to do it for you. And I know that Twitch doesn't do it 100% for you now. Still, you still got to sort of understand like the basic principles of interacting with brands. But that must have been good for you, I imagine.
Well, for me, I had a very unique advantage of coming from the television industry. So I had a lot of contacts already because I was handling review copies and opportunities during my television days. So a lot of the time, I was kind of like the only streamer in the region that would get something because I was the one that had the contacts and no one else did. They didn't know who to talk to because I would just email them and be like, yo, what up? Give me this game. So I had a very distinct, for the first probably, I'd say almost 2 years of streaming, I had this very, very distinct advantage, for lack of a better term, of simply knowing all the right people. And I've always been a huge advocate of like networking is really crucial. Going to events is really crucial. It's 100% the thing to do if you want to succeed is get to those like networking events and get yourself out there. And I kind of always embraced that even during my television days, trying to get to these events and having these like American and Japanese contacts long before others did, which means that I could explore these opportunities as kind of a testbed streamer and get these cool activations out of them before they rolled them out to the bigger partners.
I mean, you sort of hit the nail on the head. I mean, you know, a lot of partners and creators that have been on this podcast have said, you know, exactly the same thing about networking and, you know, get not just getting your name out there, but also getting the contacts of other people. And I was actually watching, his name escapes me, but he's not a streamer, but he has a big YouTube channel. He was streaming on Periscope on Twitter the other day, and he was talking about, you know, sometimes it's good to have contacts where you can pass people on to other people. You know, I mean, I know this isn't directly Twitch related, but just being able to pass on the information to another creator kind of, it sort of builds you up as well, because it sort of shows that you take it seriously and you've got these sort of connections in the industry. And so you sort of put a foot in the door, sort of say, in terms of the community as a whole being that sort of, you know, brand ambassador almost. Which takes me on to the sort of next topic that I just wanted to mention whilst we're on the topic of, you know, becoming ambassadors and working for brands and things, is Stream Elements. Because you, big congratulations, by the way. I know it was a couple of weeks ago now, but you just started working for, quite recently started working for Stream Elements, right?
Yeah, so I've been with Stream Elements for a couple of months now as their Dream Team Community Manager, which is kind of like a relationships manager role. It's a very unique, very suited to me role, where I do a lot of things. For example, I travel to events, as you may know, as kind of a front-facing ambassador for the platform and for what we do. So I talk to creators at events, and I also make sure that we're executing our VIP program, our Dream Team program, in the best ways that we can and adding the most benefits that we can.
And what I mean, obviously, you said it was like a very you role. What sort of drew you to the role initially?
Well, the role didn't actually exist. I was poached. I was headhunted at TwitchCon Europe. I met one of the co-founders there, Perry, fantastic dude. Shout out to him. And I met him at the Twitch EU partner party, and he was like, "Oh, yo, what up? You're the Blessed RNG guy." I'm like, "Yo, what up? How you doing?" He's like, "It's good. What do you do?" And he's like, "I'm a community manager," because I was working as a community manager in the indie dev industry at the time. And he goes, "Oh, cool. We should chat then. See if there's something that we could fit out, because looking at expanding into the community manager space, we could use your expertise and use some advice here." Talked to them for a while, and then they kind of figured out, wait a second, you could actually fit really well for us managing our dream team. Did you want to give it a shot? And I was like, why not? I did love my previous job, but I chatted to the crew at Stream Elements a lot, and ethically, I really align with what they do. I align with what the company stands for, what they aim to achieve, and how they kind of put the creator first. I really, really like that approach that Elements has. So as a result, I signed the contract and, you know, started working here.
I mean, all I can do is say big congratulations. Now, I don't... This show is not about getting into the drama of things. We are not a drama show, but I do, something that you just said, I do want to talk about. Obviously, Stream Elements putting the streamer first. Obviously, there's been a bit of drama, for anybody that is unaware, there's been a bit of drama recently about Twitch versus this whole Mixer thing. Now, obviously, I won't sit here and ask you, I mean, by all means, you can if you want to, but I won't ask you what your personal opinions are on the matter. But obviously, I think a lot of people right now could definitely use some, you know, not just businesses, but I think could just learn and really use some creators first type movements. So obviously, how do you feel about the whole issue of creators feeling a little bit left out by platforms? Because obviously, as somebody that likes creators, is an advocate sort of creators first, what's your sort of take on all the things that have been happening recently?
It's a difficult question to answer. I've been traveling for a lot of this, so I've kind of missed out on a lot of what's going on. So my opinion is perhaps not as qualified as somebody else's. But I do always, again, advocating being creators first is really important, making sure that brands are creators first when they can without shortening themselves out, making sure creators are also putting themselves first too, without muddying situations and making things difficult. It's always a really difficult line to tread, making sure that you're looking after your creators, looking after your fellow creators, but making sure that you're not taking advantage of a situation either. So the responsibility for creators first doesn't just fall to the brands and the companies, but it falls to the creators as well. Creators need to focus on making sure that they are doing the fair thing and the right thing for the space in general. It's really important that everybody works together on these kinds of net positive goals where the creators gain, the brands gain, the platforms gain, the audience gains, because the audience is the most important part of all this. Without an audience, the creators, what are they doing? Unless they don't mind creating to nothing, which I don't mind doing, but you know what I mean, right? That's kind of stuff's really, really crucial. So I'd say, like, you know, streamers feeling left out of things, they're allowed to. Of course, streamers are entitled to feel whatever they like. Those feelings can be completely, completely valid. If they feel like they've been wronged, they're allowed to feel like they've been wronged. What's important is you know, what they do with that, and the way they act as a result, whether, you know, and try to, even in that space, try and continue to focus on being positive, putting creators first. I think that's really, really crucial. I know it's a really roundabout way of saying things. This is kind of a roundabout answer, but it's kind of the best I've got.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, like I said, the question, you can probably tell the question was quite difficult to ask in the first place, just because I'm not personally one for, you know, I think it's got a term now. I think Twitter's coined it clout chasing or something. You know, I don't really have an interest in sort of chasing drama or anything like that. I just wanted to sort of get your opinion, because that really sort of, it pretty much hit home, you know, being sort of creative first. It's kind of like that falls in line with the whole reason why I do this podcast, is because I really want to, not only do I want to share your journey, but I want to hope, I can only hope that the words that you say from the questions that I ask make some people think about their own content and how they can improve it and how they can adapt. And, you know, everybody's journey is completely unique. I think we can both agree on that, in that there's no two journey the same. I mean, you might disagree, actually. I won't put words in your mouth, but so obviously let's talk about your sort of take on streaming nowadays. Like, what do you think is sort of crucial advice to somebody trying to grow a stream in 2019?
That's hard, because I grew my stream in 2015. So the knowledge that I would have may not necessarily apply here. What I did in 2015 probably would not work now, which is finding a unique pocket of a game that has not got creators and making the most of that, because there are now significantly more creators. There are 35,000 partners compared to 14,000 partners before. There are millions of people broadcasting on multiple platforms every hour of every day. It is so much harder to use the same strategy I did. And in fact, I would say you couldn't use the same strategy that I did anymore, which is, you know, knowing all the people in the space before other people knew people in the space. Brands have wisened up now. Brands now approach talent agencies because they're now a thing. And brands approach streamers directly because they've become more business smart, which is very, very good that they have. And then they also, you know, approach companies like us to do things for them as well. It's smart that they've done these things. To grow these days, the requirements of partnership are significantly different as well. Back when I got it, you needed to get, you know, 500 concurrents, or 100 if you're in Australia, which I had. Whereas these days, you only need 75. It sounds like you need a lot less, but given how many more content creators are in the market, there's significantly more of them, is actually kind of still hard to get those numbers. It's a lot harder than I feel it was, which is why the requirements are a little bit lower. And it needs to be 75, you know, genuine community active viewers as well. You can't just play marbles on stream and have like 100 viewers in there that don't interact with your audience. Doesn't count, unfortunately. Marvel Stream is very fun, mind you. It's a very, very fun game. But you know what I mean. Like, there need to be 75 active community viewers, or at least around that amount. To grow these days, though, it's not enough, unfortunately, just kind of, as much as I love to say, just be yourself and do the content. Do that if that's the reason that you want to do things. You know, if you want to stream to grow, if you want to stream specifically with the goal of growing and succeeding and monetizing and turning it into a career, there are certain things you need to do. You need to, you know, make sure you know how discoverability works. Make sure you're using Twitch tags correctly. For YouTube, make sure you're using SEO correctly. Make sure you're all above your social media game. The most important advice I can give anybody, and this is still applicable now, is spend just as much time watching Twitch as you do creating content. If you spend an hour streaming, you've just spent an hour watching other people's streams as well. This is good for a variety of reasons. Not only are you learning what other streamers do so you can see how to improve your own stream, but you're making friends in the space. You're effectively, for lack of a better term, networking. And that can be really important if you're looking to join like a stream team or looking to make other friends of a similar size, or you can, you know, do content together or things like that. It's really important to make those connections. And don't be afraid to attend your local Twitch events either, your local Twitch community meetup events. Almost every city has one now. I run the Melbourne ones here. They're a really good way to meet new people, meet like-minded people. Then from there, you guys can make content together, connect your audiences together, and grow that way. One of my old best friends, I haven't talked to her in a long time now, unfortunately, but a lot of her audience still sticks in my chat and mine still sticks in hers because we hung out a lot and we hung out on social media really, really heavily. So as a result, our communities kind of merged and we both grew as a result.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're the more professional one here, but I do agree. And I think everybody else would agree that, you know, one of the big elements of building, because you're essentially, you're not just playing a game anymore in 2019 when it comes to, if you want to do streaming as a career, let's use that terminology. It's more building a brand, or at least I would say, I don't know if you agree, I'd say that in 2019, it's more about building a brand than it is just about playing games. I mean, that's essentially what you've just said, you know, you've got to be, you know, conscious about, you know, networking and making sure that you've got the right image for the sort of games that you want to play. And I mean, it's quite hard to find that niche nowadays. I know what you're saying about, you know, you found your niche of, you know, especially when you were streaming the 3DS and whatnot, because you were one of only five people that were streaming the DS. And for, like, nowadays, it's kind of like the sort of generic advice people would tell you is you've got to find that game that isn't too oversaturated, but then you can't go and stream that game that's completely dead either, because you're not going to get anywhere. So it's kind of like everybody's mining for that perfect game. But something that I've always said, now I don't know if you'll agree with this, but I've always said that the game does matter. I use this analogy of baking a cake, and when it comes to baking a cake, the game is the eggs that you put in the cake. You know, it's a vital ingredient, but it's not the biggest part of the ingredient. And I feel like you can build, you know, a career in any sort of game, in any sort of niche or oversaturated game, if you understand other core principles about, like you said earlier, you mentioned about audience, you know, being one of the biggest things, because without your audience, you're creating to no one. So I know when I interviewed I'm Stallion, who's a Twitch partner, he got partnered strictly or most majoritively doing Fortnite, which was almost unheard of at this point, because this was about a year and a half after Fortnite had been out. His entire partnership was built on the fact that he focused everything he had in his viewer experience. So every stream, he made it like a party. You know, he had sort of loud dance music, flashing lights, and he would invite people to play with him, and he'd have like a queue system set up, and it was all about entertaining the viewer. And I think that's kind of an important element. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but I feel like that's like the flour to the cake, if we're going to use that analogy. I feel like the flour would be something like understanding the importance of the experience of what the viewer is going to get when they're watching your stream, especially in 2019.
This can vary. I feel if you're in the variety streamer space, this is incredibly, incredibly applicable. If you're in a variety streamer, you don't have the luxury of people coming back to you for the same game. They come back solely for you as an entertainer. They like your entertainment value, whether you're a personable person or you have, like, I would say, like fancy effects or things to keep people engrossed or interested. But you can very much just be really good at a video game and just play the game and don't have to be a good entertainer, and people will still watch. And there's nothing wrong with that. There are many ways one can succeed on platforms like this. Like, being personable is really good. Being good at a video game is another good way. Or being unique with your content is another one. A big example I use for unique content is one of our TwitchCon ambassadors, and he's a Stream Element Stream Team member, the Sushi Dragon. This guy is a fantastic dude living out in NorCal, and he dances to music. But he has hundreds of different scenes on multiple computers that he can switch to via wireless controllers in his hand in real time. It's incredibly psychedelic and very fun to watch and very full of energy, but no one else does that content. It's uniquely him. By a couple of Russian streamers I know who do similar stuff without the live editing part. They just dance and kick their bed a lot. But yeah, it's unique content. And as a result, he's also a very personable character, which is great. Doesn't play any games, though. Just, like, does something unique. And because they've found that unique thing, it gives them significantly more reach and makes them more entertaining. But more importantly, also doesn't detract them from going somewhere else because there's nowhere else on the platform to get that kind of content. So they can kind of really make the most of it. I think that there are definitely multiple ways you can approach being successful on the platform, for lack of a better term. And they're kind of the three major ones, as I said, to quickly re-clarify. Like, you know, be good at a video game, be personable, or create something unique. If you do one of those three things, preferably two of those three things, you'll often do really well.
Yeah, I mean, building a stream normally does come down to sort of value that you deliver to somebody, right? So whether that be educational value, entertainment value, emotional value, and things like that. And I mean, Sushi sounds like he's got one heck of a stream. but definitely something that I should definitely, you know, check out at some point. But also I feel like a big thing now, not so much, you know, a few years ago, but Twitch isn't just about gaming anymore. Quite obviously, I'm streaming a podcast right now, which obviously isn't a game, unless if you want to play a game. But that's anyway. but Twitch is it's vast now compared to what it used to be. I mean, back in the day, like eight 9 years ago, it used to be Justin.tv, and I think everything was streamed on Justin.tv. But then it was bought out and focused down on gaming content, but I imagine you'll see quite a lot of varied content, you know, working with Stream Elements and stuff, not just gamers. So what would you say, how can I go about asking this question? It's like, do you think that you can, obviously you can, but do you think that it's a viable platform to be building any sort of content on, rather than just gaming? Like, do you think, obviously Sushi did it, so do you think anybody could come on Twitch and essentially stream anything and build an audience now?
Oh, completely. These days I do IRL streaming predominantly. I don't play games much anymore because I travel a lot. So I do a lot of IRL travel streaming. I know friends, and IRL friends of mine who have only gotten to streaming 3 months ago, and they only do IRL, and they got partnered within a month. And now they're already getting 300 concurrents and they've been streaming for 3 months. It's completely viable to do like non-endemic things or things that are not necessarily video gaming on this platform. That's why creative exists as a category. That's why art and music exists as categories. You know, social eating exists as a category, because they're categories that you can make content on and that people all throughout the world on various platforms succeed in doing. Twitch is simply another platform, but and it just depends on, you know, its target market is different because Twitch is predominantly an American audience. So that's something you just factor in for, depending on if that's the kind of, you know, content you want to make for that audience, that's the platform that you use. So you can succeed on any platform kind of making any content really. And I think, yeah, you could definitely do that. There are people who do cooking who succeed, people who travel who succeed, all kinds of stuff is very successful on a variety of platforms, you know, whether it be Twitch, YouTube, Facebook Gaming. You can do this kind of stuff on Facebook Gaming. You can't as gaming, but like, you know, YouTube Live as well, same deal. You can make all kinds of content. I met someone at VidCon who streams their dog training sessions, and they're successful as live streaming dog trainers. So you can definitely mix things up quite a lot.
So what? In fact, let's take a step back from the streaming related question, and let's talk a little bit about your travels, because obviously you've mentioned it a lot, and I feel like it is important to what you are doing right now in terms of your content. You said you're doing a lot of traveling streams. Is there anything you could tell us about that? Like, what's the purpose of your traveling at the moment?
Well, I'm normally traveling for work, right? So for Stream Elements, they'll send me to events to travel and go to those events. I generally have a little bit of time around the sides. I need a little bit of recovery time after an event just to kind of, you know, because they are often, you know, 12 to 16 hour days of constant on the ball networking and talking to people. I need to optimize my time. I've flown 16 hours from Australia for this. I've got to make the most of it. So I'll often give myself a day or two around the side to kind of like take it easy or like do something different to kind of like relax my brain and get myself back into a positive headspace and into a working and effective headspace. Otherwise you burn out. So generally I'll stream during those times, or I'll stream on the show floor for a couple of hours one of the days. Just take a little bit of a break, a little bit of me time, just to kind of like travel stream and have fun. I also do travel streaming in my own town in Melbourne, Australia. I do it on weekends. Most weekends I'll do 10, 12 hour days, just walking around Melbourne, having fun, finding cool things to do and going to go do them. I really enjoy it. It's a fun thing for me to just to do to clear my head. It's a really easy way to make content because I, you know, I'm just streaming my life for 12 hours. So IRL streaming allows you to get significantly large amounts of time on platform making content, because then you can start streaming your life. So I think that's some of the stuff I really like to do. Traveling is my favorite thing to do. I very much have the travel bug if I could. And I've contemplated before just traveling full time, like not having a house and just traveling endlessly. I'm still not against that idea. It's something I will still, I still constantly contemplate being like, do I need a home? I don't know if I need a home anymore. We'll see how we go. I've got a lot more work I need to optimize at Stream Elements. But once I've optimized a bunch of stuff, we may be at the point where I can start doing my work and like constantly being, you know, just anywhere and traveling the world at the same time and then streaming in the evenings. There's a lot for me to study and explore in that space.
Damn. I mean, that's absolute goals, right? You know, right there. I mean, being able to wake up and just think, once you've optimized a bit more, like, I'm just going to go traveling full time and it's part of my job and I can still stream on Twitch, like you said. I'm getting excited thinking about that, and that's not even my lifestyle, that's your lifestyle. So I can't imagine what that must be like for you. I mean, you did mention a little bit about burnout. I mean, I imagine you've had a bit of, streaming for 5 years, you've probably had a bit of experience with burnout. I've been streaming myself for just a year and a half, and I've recently just come back from a bit of a, you know, like a burnout hiatus type thing, because it was like, you know, I was trying too hard to put games at the epicenter of what I thought was growing my content, and I just completely forgot about the whole, personality of me and why people actually come to the streams. So I imagine you've probably had a bit of experience with burnout over the years.
Oh, definitely so, in a variety of ways. I burnt out on Monster Hunter once and took a massive, massive break. I just simply hit, was just done. I was like, I've played this game for years, I can't take it anymore. So I took a year break from Monster Hunter, and that's when I switched to being a variety streamer. I took 6 months off broadcasting once, and I've taken large hiatuses before, just because, you know, like, didn't feel like doing it at the time. These days, to me, streaming is something I solely do for fun. I really enjoy it. I still, of course, try and do as many sponsored activations as I can, because why wouldn't you? But I do it solely as a fun thing. I have a schedule on my channel I should just frankly remove and change to streaming when I feel like it, because that's kind of when I do it. It's something I'd like to do when I feel like doing it. I have no obligations to it. It's just fun. And for those who choose to support me, fantastic. It's not very many people, and that's completely fine, because I've, you know, there's even a bit of a gag in my channel of like, oh, it's the yearly channel revival, because every year Brad takes a huge break at some point and he kills his channel and he starts again. Happens every time, with every year without fail. I've done my one for this year already, but with the advocacy of IRL streaming, I'm now streaming more. IRL streaming gets me out of the house and gets me having fun. So these days I've used IRL streaming as my way to kind of like be fun and kind of do more with my life. So streaming has become a big part of what I do again, just significantly less in the games department. I do try and do games in the evening, but while I'm at home, I'm obviously doing a lot of work with Stream Elements at the moment. I'm kind of burning the midnight oil a little bit, because I want to really optimize what we're doing at the company, because I'm really passionate about what we do. So I actually have, I really love streaming, but I actually have more fun doing the work. So I am working hard at the moment to make sure that we get what we need to get done. And then once I've gotten that all into a nice point where I feel it's much better, then I can kind of focus on doing some more streaming again, you know, kind of evening the balance a little bit more.
I mean, burning the midnight oil is definitely an understatement at almost, 7 a.m. but yeah, your whole journey is kind of like, I think because a lot of people have in mind, don't they, when they start streaming, they're like, some people have that predetermined notion where they use streaming to get into the gaming industry or get into the industry, and then some people get into streaming, you know, purely to have fun, and then there's people that get into streaming because they want streaming to be their career. And probably definitely more towards the first half, you know, wanting to use streaming to just build up my own brand, but, you know, build connections and end up in a career around streaming or something. That would be fantastic. And I mean, did you always have in mind that you were gonna end up working for, like, in the industry, or were you, did you just obviously stream, I mean, you stream now for fun and you started for fun, but as things started to get a bit more serious in a partnership, did you think about using it to end up in the industry, or were you just using it to have a career in streaming?
I never wanted to do streaming full time. It's never been something I've been interested in. I've always called it the hobby I take too seriously. I've used that line for my entire streaming career. It is the hobby I take too seriously. I invest lots of money into it because it's my fun little hobby. We've all got a hobby, we've all got a vice, and mine is pouring money into my broadcasting and broadcasting. I didn't plan on necessarily like guaranteeing myself an industry job out of broadcasting. When I started streaming, I was working in retail and kind of didn't have a qualification, and I'd kind of resigned myself to that's what I'm going to be doing. But then I did a lot of volunteer work in like PR and marketing in the past for like anime festivals and like local festivals and things like that. I did always kind of want to work more in that kind of space. As kind of something I felt that I was, you know, after working in television, I had a passion for like PR, public relations and marketing and kind of that thing. And then as I was streaming more, I kind of just fell into it, for lack of a better term. A lot of the industry work I fell into. Actually, my first industry job was quality assurance. I was QA at an anime company, so I got paid to watch anime all day, which was very underpaid, but I was watching anime all day, so who cared? It was a fun job, so I didn't really mind. That was kind of where I fell into to begin with. Then I got some marketing experience from there, and I was already streaming at the time, and then kind of like just combined the two in together and continually found more and more marketing and CM experience afterwards. So it was never really like the aim. It kind of happened to go that way. And then when it started going that way, then I converted into, I reckon I could do this as a career. I should look into doing this as a career. And then that's exactly what I did. Wound up at Dauntless for a year and a quarter with Phoenix Labs, and now I'm a Stream Elements doing it full time.
I mean, if there's a journey on Twitch that has got me jealous, it's definitely your journey. Especially when, you know, being on the sort of edge of just traveling full time, you know, obviously part of your job, but still traveling full time is just, I'm jealous. I've got nothing else to say apart from the fact that I am jealous. but I mean, obviously, you know, there's been quite a varied topics discussed this evening. I mean, is there anything that you feel that you want to touch upon that I might have missed out, essentially, in terms of growth or your advice, or anything that you might want to say that I might have not touched upon?
I think it's hard to say. The biggest piece of advice I can always give to anybody who's not so much growing but contemplating starting broadcasting is just to start. The biggest regret I have in broadcasting is I was a Justin TV viewer for a good year and a half, 2 years before I started streaming. I wish I'd started streaming the moment I knew about the service. But I spent too long trying to perfect my craft when I should have just started and then grown my craft from there. It's okay to start with a stream with no microphone and no camera. As long as you start somewhere and then make goals to grow from there. Whether those goals are as simple as I want to stream once more a month, to I want to stream this game a bit more, to I want to get a piece of technology, to I want to add a bot to my channel. You know, small goals are completely fine as goals. As long as you start, once you start, you can kind of figure out what you want to do and what goals you want to grow from there. And then you just, you know, slowly work on accomplishing those, or quickly work on accomplishing those if you have the time. Maybe you've got the time to put in more time than I did when I started. When I started, I streamed probably twice, three times a week for a couple of hours. It wasn't very long because I had a girlfriend at the time, and she wanted to spend a lot of time with me, which is great. I loved it, but it meant I didn't have a whole lot of time to commit to content creation. But if you have more time, then, you know, change your goals, I guess, in that regard. and do that. And always remember why you're streaming. Never forget the reason why you're broadcasting. It's really important to remember that. If you lose sight of the reason why you're making content, you'll probably stop making content. For me, I lost sight of that quite a few times. So I always remember I always ask myself why I stream. If I'm not feeling like I want to stream that day, I ask, why do I stream? And the reason why I stream is to make new friends and to hang out with my friends who are watching. It's the reason why I watch Twitch as well, to hang out with my friends on the platform. So as a result, that motivates and inspires me to stream a lot more than I normally would.
So I take it something like, you know, getting into streaming purely for the financial aspect probably isn't going to be the best thing to do, because you're going to find very quickly, especially in this day and age, that especially with, imagine you have very little, brand experience and very little experience in marketing yourself and networking and things, getting into streaming, you're probably going to find, financially driven, you're probably going to find that you'll fall flat on your face pretty quickly, I imagine.
It's hard to say, I wouldn't say you're necessarily guaranteed to fall flat in your face. Maybe you're really good at that video game when I wasn't, and, you weren't aware of it, stream wasn't aware of it, and all of a sudden you do really well. It's just a case of, making sure your goals are within realistic expectations. If you are aiming to do it financially, for the reasons of finances, to make money off it, make sure you set your goals accordingly and make sure you have the appropriate safeties and fallbacks for if it doesn't go to plan. Don't just, be like, I'm going to quit my job and go full time. I've got no money in the bank. That's incredibly risky. Maybe it'll work for you, but the chances are not necessarily in your favor. And the risk from doing that's incredibly, incredibly high. Manage your expectations, manage your goals, and make sure you have safeties and fallbacks if you are taking risks.
All right. Well, I mean, some fantastic, some fantastic advice there. And again, I've already said it. I've said it once and I'll say it again. Very jealous of your journey. Very, very jealous. And definitely a position I imagine many would hope to find themselves in years to come. Whether that, be streaming as a partner or traveling the world working for such an esteemed company. I wish I had something else to add to that, but unfortunately I'm kind of taken back, because it is such a great, it's almost, I hope you don't mind me saying this, it's almost like a movie in terms of not that you went through anything bad as the protagonist, but you, as the protagonist, you built up something great, and now your life is kind of, I won't say happily ever after, that's probably a bit cheesy and probably not true from your perspective.
Not there yet.
I imagine you've still got a lot of things that you want to do on your bucket list, but I mean, just in terms as a content creator, I mean, you started something you loved, you went into your niche, you built it up, you got far and still going far, and now you're working for a company. It's great.
It was just a lot of hard work. I come from a lower class government housing background. I come from a pretty poor upbringing, so just the case of worked really hard, put a lot of volunteer work in to begin with, put in the hard yards because you had to. If you want to succeed, generally it's not going to be handed to you on a silver platter. If you have to put in the hard yards, you have to work hard, network hard. Again, most important thing, go to conventions, meet people, network. Every single one of my jobs I've gotten via that way, guaranteed in the industry, have all been because I met them at a show or I got hired at a show. So I advocate very heavily for going to shows and making friends at conventions. If you can, if you're able to, whether it's a small convention or a big one, doesn't matter. Going to conventions and going to networking events is most important thing for me, 100%. That's why I go to so many of them. That's why I travel to so many things, even if it's on my own dime or if it's on work's dime, is because it's really important to kind of keep that going. So always do that kind of stuff is a wonderful thing I can impart for sure. But yeah, I just worked really hard. And luck was on my side as well. I got lucky to enter that tournament. I got lucky enough to win multiple tournaments to gain something that has given me this kind of weird online celebrity status, for lack of a better term. Not that I feel like I am one, but people refer to me as one. So that was just luck. So there is luck factored into that as well. That you can work hard and do everything right, and you may still fail. I know there's a Star Trek quote that's related to that, but I forget what it is right now. You know what I mean? Like, you can copy Yashimaru, right? So you can do everything you correctly, but still be destined to fail. It's just an unfortunate nature of things. Luck is something that does play a part. But if you work really hard, you can mitigate as much of that as possible.
Yeah, I have a slight different view, but hear me out, because I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that I feel like luck doesn't really exist. I feel like it's just the opportunity presenting itself, but being in the position and having the knowledge to act on that, the word's completely gone out of my brain. Help me out here. I just said it a second ago.
Like act on the opportunity.
Yes, opportunity. Thank you. My brain just went completely blank. Yeah. So, I always say that. I've always said that I don't think it's necessarily luck. I think it's the opportunity presenting itself and you being in a position to take the opportunity. For example, like Ninja, let's take Ninja. He seemed to be like the staple of somebody that got lucky. But I feel like, you know, he streamed Halo for like 3-4 years or something, for like 4 or 5 years. And then Fortnite came out. And he took the opportunity that was presented to him to stream Fortnite. And it just so happened that the opportunity arose when Fortnite was growing. So, I mean, it's personal. It's perspective, isn't it? I would say that it was just, you know, seizing an opportunity. And I know a lot of people tend to use the term, oh, well, he just got lucky because of Fortnite. I mean, obviously, you've said the latter half. About, you know, about luck being a thing. And you are right. You know, sometimes you can have everything right, but you just don't get that chance to act on it. And so it essentially fails before it has a chance to succeed. But I mean, obviously, it worked for you. Personally, I'm still finding that path. I'm still trying to work hard to find the opportunities. And just to sort of backtrack quickly on something you said earlier about, you know, you working hard for things. Do you feel like, and I have to be careful asking this, do you feel like there's a lot of entitlement now with the amount of creators that there are? Do you feel like there's a lot of entitlement in the community amongst smaller creators?
I don't think so, no. I don't think that they feel particularly entitled to things. Maybe that's just the scene of people who I work with, or the scene of people and creators who I hang out with. But I don't really see that. The creators I hang out with are overwhelmingly positive, and they're thankful for the opportunities that they get. And if they don't get an opportunity, they don't get, you know, particularly mad about it. They see what they need to do. They thank them anyway, and they work to get better. And they work to, you know, do more to open up those opportunities in the future, and they don't burn those bridges. So I don't really see that, no. But keep in mind, my sample space for content creation is very tiny. There are millions of people on the platform. I can't claim to know millions of them. I know thousands of them, sure, and that's significantly more than most. But I still only know a tiny amount of the platform. So it's hard for me to say. Maybe there is a section in content creation that is that way. If they are there, that's not one that I particularly see. The people who I see are all overwhelmingly positive and understand the space, understand what they're doing, and focus more on their craft and focus more on what they're doing, and instead of expecting everything handed to them on a silver platter.
Yeah, maybe it's just me spending too much time on Twitter. I know there's a lot of there's not a lot, but there is definitely some people that like to blame everybody else for their shortcomings rather than admit to the fact that they aren't putting in the work and aren't putting in the effort. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I haven't really got, you know, anything else that could possibly build upon your journey. We've covered, you know, you coming in from TV and then building your way up to partnership and then streaming as a partner and then coming and working for Stream Elements. And I mean, I don't think I've missed anything out, unless if you've been hiding something from me. what do you reckon?
We didn't talk about my Dauntless part much, but that's fine. So, much to say there, really. So, it was a fun job.
I mean, Dauntless was a cool filler game, I suppose.
game is still really good now. The game is, I still follow it very, very fervently, and it's getting bigger and better every month.
I played Dauntless in the period of when I was waiting for Monster Hunter World, but I haven't really seen it after that. But I mean,
oh, the game has changed a lot since then, significantly so. A lot of people played it during that time, that like Monster Hunter waiting room period, but the game was a very different beast to what it is now. That's for sure.
Yeah, I should probably go back at some point and have a look at that. Anyway, hopefully you have a short amount of time to answer any questions, but I do want to say, unless if there's anything else you want to add, I do want to thank you for using sort of spending your time coming on to this show today. I know that it is like 7 a.m. for you, or 7:30 a.m. for you, and you started this at like 6 a.m. So you are one crazy morpho, but I absolutely love your face for coming on. And I'd say I bless RNG that you have more success in the future, but I mean, well, it can only get better from here, right? Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Hopefully, yeah, things are already pretty good. I think it'd be hard for him to get better at the moment, but I'll keep trying. Always more to do, always more to aim for, and always more to help others with too. So,
I mean, do you want to give anything a shout out, i.e., anybody, or do you want to let anybody know where they can find you? Do you want to give your Twitch a shout out?
Well, finding me is pretty easy. For those who are aware of the Twitch space, you can find me on BlessRNG, BlessRNG on Twitter, on Twitch as well. They're the two main social medias that I use. I do use Instagram a little bit. It's BlessRNG with two E's at the end because it was taken. As I'm trying to do more IRL content, I'm trying to get more into the Instagram space and more the travel influencer space. But they're the places you can really find me. Don't particularly have any shout-outs per se. Just always happy to do this kind of stuff and, you know, spread positive energy around. It's the most important thing. As long as I'm doing that, I'm all good.
Please forgive me, guys. This episode is a little bit late this week. We had some unfortunate news. Ashley's Nana is not very well. I will explain a little bit more possibly in next week's episode. However, guys, I just wanted to thank you for listening to these podcasts. You are literally making my dream come true, and ultimately that is helping me help you make your dream come true by continuing to interview great people like BlessRNG and like some great people we've got coming up in the future, so that you can learn what it means to be a successful content creator on the internet. Guys, thank you so much once again. I hope you all have a wonderful week, and I will see you guys next week.